Welcome to Cryptic Chronicles, a show that's all about everything mysterious, unexplained, and weird in the world. Today on the show, we're going to have our part two of Hermes, the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus. But just as a quick overview of what I already said in the first episode on this topic, I covered the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, the Atlantean, the Kabbalion, and the Emerald Tablet of Hermes. Again, not trying to be objective, empirical, or scholarly here, just trying to tell the tale of the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus. Some of the New Age stuff is bunk, some of the New Age stuff is legit, and who can say or know what is and what is not while pleasing everyone? Not gonna happen. So I'ma just do my own thing and tell it my way. Believe or don't believe, whatever you want. In any case, we got a lot of weird esoteric stuff to talk about, don't we? So buckle up, because it's time to get weird. I'm your host, Tim Hacker, and you're listening to Cryptic Chronicles.
This is the way.
This is the way.
These entities, they would congregate.
Now is the time to take risks.
Where I left off, we were talking about Hermes Trismegistus influencing the Greco-Roman world, the Egyptian-Greek world, and the Coptic Age as a whole, and all that good stuff in Alexandria. And just how different the worldview was back then compared to how it is now in modern times. The area was literally a boiling stew of Hermetic ideas, which boiled over into philosophical ideas that then spilled over to influence the entire world. The All, or the One Thing, among many other names, was absorbed into other religions of the time. And some even say that this kind of influenced the eventual rise of monotheism, just like one supreme, all-knowing, all-powerful God. And this is pretty debatable, though. I mean, if you look at Hinduism, if you look at Zoroastrianism, this idea has been around for a long time. I don't think, personally, it was created by Hermeticism. I think that this idea has been around forever, especially like you look at Native American religions and whatnot. You got the Great Spirit. Anyway, I'm kind of blabbing. Let me get back to the focus. We're talking about the teachings of Hermes, not global folklore, mythology, religion, right? The point is just that the influence of Hermeticism is basically undeniable. It's huge all throughout Western culture. And beyond it, even. The mystery survived regardless of, like, inquisitions, oppression, censorship, you know, of the ruling people. Though the Hermetic works weren't always suppressed, I should probably clarify that. Because a lot of people who cover this stuff try to say that it was always all suppressed and, like, considered heresy and all that. And it was, but it's like an individual, like, region-to-region basis, kind of how they handled stuff. And a lot of these early Christians just loved Hermetic work. So there's some gray area, if you get my meaning. And there's a little bit of overlap with Gnosticism. So wherever Hermeticism was associated with Gnosticism, you can be assured that those Christians put that shit to the sword, if you get my drift. The establishment mainstream Christians of the era, the Catholics, I should say, they did not like Gnostics, and it was basically kill on sight. They genocided an entire people in southern France because of this. But in any case, if you were a Hermeticist, it was probably best to be careful. And the best place to hide is basically just in plain sight, right? After all, Hermeticism was an anti-Jesus, and could, even from the idea also from Gnosticism, they were all about Jesus as well. They could see Jesus as a representation of the outer God, the all, the one thing, analogous to its son, I guess. So if they wanted to, they could pretty much blend in with society quite well. And it's through these people that really, like, the torch of the mysteries kept on burning, because the people of the era who kept all these logs and writings and ancient scriptures and texts, these were like the monks and stuff like that. And the monks weren't really in a hurry to keep upkeep or take care of pagan stuff, you know what I mean? So a lot of times hermetic writings were preserved because of these hermeticists. But like I said, it's all individual, region by region basis. In the East, all this stuff was like really taken care of. The Hermetic God is interesting because it's just so much more unlimited and unfathomable compared to the egoic representations of a supreme God in the Abrahamic religions that we're used to. It also doesn't even have to be seen as God, quote unquote, as we think of it. It's like the Force from Star Wars in a lot of ways, which I'm sure many old school Star Wars fans think is kind of cool, and it is. Me, myself, being an old school Star Wars fan. Not the new stuff, it's horrible. And it's interesting how it seems, at least, like Lucas got a lot of influence from Hermeticism and Taoism when he was coming up with the idea of the Force. I got an interest in this back when my mom taught me about Gnostics when I was a kid. So I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, and she taught me all kinds of weird things like other kids seem to not have any idea about. Like, when I would go to school, I was very surprised at all the things the other kids did not know. When I was 6, I already knew the history of Egypt, Greece, etc. You know, Gnostics, the ancient mysteries, stuff that normally you wouldn't even ever be taught in school unless you specifically specialized into it in college. So I got pretty lucky. Someone on Patreon called the part one of the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus fan fiction. So in this episode, we're going to get into the real deal stuff, and because we're done with the fan fiction stuff in episode one. And whether you find that stuff credible or part of Hermeticism or not is up to you. I'm not trying to tell you what to think on the matter. Make your own decisions and choices about it. Out of all that stuff, though, the Emerald Tablet of Hermes is definitely the most legit of all that stuff. I think, at least. And I am a sucker for the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. A guilty pleasure. But now we're going to get into the real juicy stuff concerning Hermeticism, aka Hermetism. The classical stuff. The core and real deal things that can be attributed to Hermes, the master of masters. The original and highest depth. I mean, I did kind of get into this stuff at the end of the last episode covering the teachings of Hermes, when I talked about the hymn to Hermes and the poem of Parmenides. So include those two texts in this real deal Hermeticism category. But the rest of the stuff that I talked about in episode one of the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus is just basically DLC, add-ons, if you want them there or not. Anyway, moving on. From at least since the time of Herodotus. Herodotus is a very famous ancient historian, FYI. But it's also possible that this was even a thing before the time of Herodotus. The Greeks associated their god Hermes with the Egyptian god Thoth. Many people are not aware of just how big Thoth was in ancient Egypt, because he was a figure of intense reverence by all, and he played a way bigger role than is seen at face value. He established Egyptian religion, art, cosmology, and countless other things vital to human culture. And in some legends, he's even the god who fashioned the cosmos itself, and is in essence the very intelligence of Re, the mind of the sun. The ethnocentrism common throughout civilizations was taken beyond extreme in Egypt, to the point they saw themselves as the center of the whole universe. In one Latin text in the Corpus Hermeticum, the fall of Thoth's established religions is actually foretold. And to the ancient Egyptians, this could easily be analogous to what the Book of Revelation was, or is, I mean, to Christians, or any of the ancient apocalyptic scripture lore legends that were really, really popular around the few centuries beginning the Common Era. But the Egyptians, they literally saw themselves, their gods, their religion, their philosophies, their mysteries, as the center of all things. The god forms were embodied everywhere and in everything. The priest of a particular god was, in essence, the invoked god form of that god. And what is, was, and will be took on a new meaning, as their representation was stated flatly as a timeless endeavor. To see inscriptions, writing, or hieroglyphs associated with these gods was also to be in their presence. But this went even more extreme, to the point where any phenomena associated with the god was also a present embodiment of it. So the timeless nature in which Egyptians looked at the gods and the universe was very unique, because the gods could be in a million different places all at the same time. They were not bound by time, they were above it and flowing through all things. And this can get pretty confusing, because what's the difference between a god form and a god, right? Well, you tell me. Because every time you are feeling an emotion or having a thought associated with one of these gods, you are channeling that god form through you. Egyptians are pretty neat, huh? And this seems to maybe have influenced Carl Jung. I don't know. There's no evidence for that. But it pretty much seems pretty consistent with Carl Jung's work on and like his archetypes. So the gods were very real. They didn't believe in the gods as we would think that they believed in gods, looking at like ancient cultures, you know, like the mainstream surface knowledge kind of a way. The eminence of the gods was all around and ever present. You didn't have to believe in the gods. You just had to believe in your eyes, your emotions, your thoughts, your senses. Everything they saw all around them showed the presence of the gods. The sacred images and narratives all about Egypt went far deeper than most people think. Gods were everywhere. And wherever an experience occurred that was identified with a particular god, there was the god. And wherever new experiences would manifest through natural development of culture, art, and technology, then new gods would be born. So the pharaoh was very much the god Ra in human form, while still just being a dude, if you know what I mean. These definitions we have today for things don't fit the ideologies of the ancient Egyptians and seem to contradict themselves if you don't understand the context in which they actually work. Hermeticism is equally cryptic and hard to understand, which makes sense concerning its origination from these confusing ideas of ancient Egypt, when looking at them from a modern lens at least. You could study Hermeticism for years and still be far from understanding it. Especially if you get stuck in the mud with all that New Age stuff out there that claims to be Hermetic. The teachings of Hermes Trismegistus are by design not easily understood. Thoth Hermes is different from all other gods. Wherever there is an inscription for a god, there is a hidden ceremony. Where a hieroglyph is located, there too was Thoth. In text, word, and inscription, there too is Thoth, no matter what god is actually being represented. This is how all-encompassing Thoth was. To the Egyptian worldview of the world, you yourself, every time you have ever written anything down, typed a word on a computer, or even said your own name or been called your name, guess what? There is Thoth being channeled through you. Interesting stuff, right? In a way, every god was also Thoth. Because in order to have identity, you would have to have a name, symbol, written iconography, inscription, word written from a language. So, Thoth is also the god of individual identity, because one could not be an individual without channeling Thoth. abstract stuff, and I hope that that confused you. But this is the kind of weird, confusing stuff hermeticism is based on. Thanks, Greeks. Our whole modern world is essentially an anti-Egypt kind of worldview, which is why these concepts may seem so alien to you. We're anti-sacred, anti-timeless, and a profane mess of volatile uncertainty. Even in the wild ancient world, it seems probable that they had much more peace and stability in their lives. Depending on the time and region, of course, don't get me wrong. But, whereas like ours is pretty much just like an ever-increasing set of limitations being placed on us and unlikely futures we constantly attach ourselves to that never come to pass or never had the probability to exist in the first place. We attach importance to time-bound things that, essentially to the ancient Egyptians, mean nothing, such as status, belongings, and a cacophony of endless mind-washing propaganda and indoctrination from sources that have no interest in our well-being. The gods of our time, the faceless corporations that dominate our daily lives, seem to have complete dominance over human culture, and they are taking us in a direction that we can't come back from unless there's like some sort of cataclysmic event or some other kind of paradigm shift that breaks their stranglehold on humanity's psyche, which is always possible, so don't ever take the black pill. And the funny thing is that even this is in line with Hermetic teachings. The universe is perfect in all ways, just not complete. That is actually just as important as good for change and evolution. So, our subjective notions of what's good or what's bad for us is kind of only, it only exists on a microcosmic scale of universal reality, and actually has no importance in the macrocosmic reality of nature and the true reality. So in essence, according to the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus, you should never take the black pill. Bad can be good, just as much as good can be bad. And it's all just like a perfect and beautiful dance that plays out in eternal majesty. And if that seems kind of controversial to you to say, think about it like this. Think about maybe somebody going on their way to work, they run over a nail, pops their tire. Oh, that's bad, right? Well, what if right down the road, something horrific happened, like moments later after they popped their tire, and they probably would have died if they kept on going? That's a crude example, but when we are down in our lives at, you know, our normal human consciousness level, it's hard to see the bigger picture of things. And that's where you can really see the good mixing with the bad and the bad mixing with the good, because a lot of times even good stuff can be really, really bad for us, big picture. Think about somebody that might have succeeded too easily early on in something that they were trying to accomplish. That's basically a curse. And they're just going to sabotage themselves and never reach that peak again. With like this like delusional idea that they're superior, when it was actually just they got lucky. So I could go into way more analogies and examples, but let's move on. This idea is just basically, it's teachings of Hermes Trismegistus. And it's completely anti-modern thought. I mean, think about it. People just want to keep you in these narrow reality tunnels of like anxiety. And most people are likely propelled by this idea. People not like you, listener, of course. You know, the normies I'm talking about. And if you've never had this paradigm presented to you, it may like seem kind of insulting and even disturbing. I've had people straight up be angry after hearing it and like antagonistic and go on the attack. You know, some people probably even think it's evil. But keep in mind, I'm not preaching to you. I'm just telling you these teachings. Absorb whatever you want and dismiss whatever you want. Take all things with a grain of salt. You'll also see a lot of similarities with Eastern philosophy in here. But interesting to note to people that may be unfamiliar with this idea, and it may seem dark to them, The truth is that people who embrace this philosophy actually live a more peaceful and happy life, you know, free of a lot of worry and anxiety that plague the masses. These people are less easy to manipulate and move on the chessboard, essentially, and live much less polarized and conflicting lives. In our modern world, people rarely have any will of their own. They're just subject to artificial regulation and bottom lines and are rarely able to dictate their own life choices, or their own path in life, I should say. The ancient Egyptians embodied timelessness and eternity in their worldview, whereas we in modern times don't seem to have any time at all. The origin of the universe and the nature of consciousness are summed up as being able to be explained away once we've gained enough research, something that would be considered profane ignorance to the ancient Egyptians. To profane the mystery was to profane oneself, because the mystery was never meant to be solved in the first place, and is actually one of the key reasons why life is worth living. Think of the Taoist saying, those who know don't say, and those who say don't know. This saying may have a deeper meaning to you now, concerning like the what the Egyptians believed, which was the basis for the philosophy and teachings of Hermes Trismegistus. Modern ideology and philosophy is the exact opposite of these teachings. The Coptic Age was the boiling point that Hermetic philosophy would become like more well-known globally, I guess. Not globally, but the known world. It really had the ability to, what's a good word, marinate in ancient Alexandria. The Platonic structure of things that was synthesized at the time had a heavy influence on the later big three world religions. Dogmatic religious people may find that statement unwelcome, but it's true. And the open-minded religious people of the three big religions know it doesn't really matter anyway. After all, God works in mysterious ways, does it not? And mystery means unsolved, so any specific way they try to say that God works as like a definitive, objective fact is just actually false by the inherent nature of the mystery, by the inherent nature of mystery. Hypocritical, counterintuitive, contradictory, and some would even say delusional. Now, don't get me wrong, we still need our culture, don't we? People need order, people need structure, especially normies who don't like to think. They need these labels and these guidelines and these definitions, you know, on things that are beyond comprehension to give us like some sort of delusional control. Also, they would just rather have other people do their thinking for them. I'm talking about your common denominator, not you, dear listener, or anybody else who is uses their minds, I guess. I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say, but there is no control. However, human nature works differently. And we cannot really truly be whole unless we are true to our nature. So there is a philosophical paradox concerning organized religion and Hermetic philosophy that is at the same time welcomed as it is seen for what it is. Both exist at the same time. You see that it's just a reality tunnel, for the lack of a better word off the top of my head. But you can also see that this artificial structure is somewhat necessary, at least to common denominator people. People who don't have the time, resources, or capability to really think about existence and the deeper meaning of the mystery, of life, of everything, of the universe. But there is a place at the center, a union of opposites, where these things don't make sense, but they can be understood. Which doesn't make sense, and that's the point. Gnostic ideas like the ineffable source were cultivated in Alexandria, which is basically the one thing I mentioned earlier, or the all, essentially. Though we flow from it, we cannot define it, and any labels that we do put on it are just cultural interfaces that we use to connect to the divine. to the beyond, the ineffable, the spirit world, whatever you want to call it. So essentially, to a hermeticist, all of these religions and spiritual views in the world are and aren't at the same time. And I think I've been blabbing on a little bit. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to hop into the hermetic idea of the continuum, which also originates from Egypt. And still a lot more to cover. This is just like, this first part is just an overarching like summary of hermetic philosophy jumbled up into one coming from Egypt. But we're going to delve deeper. There's still a lot more to cover. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cryptic Chronicles.
Do you like food? Do you not like going places? Do you like staying home and having food brought to you? Well, you're in luck, because a thing called Blue Apron exists. With multiple pricing, there's a way to get the gourmet delicious meals under any budget. And it's totally worth it. Cryptic Chronicles would not promote Blue Apron unless it knew how good it is for you. With all the junk and everything these days, the majority of people sustain themselves on poison and don't even know it. A healthy spirit, mind, and body requires a healthy lifestyle, and the ability to take care of yourself, and feed your body all the nutrients it needs to function at its best in our highly demanding lives. You get to choose your own meals. The chef-designed recipes include balanced Mediterranean delicacies, quick one-pan dinners, and top-rated customer favorites. Unpack your home-delivered box with enthusiasm because there's a guarantee on freshness and the highest quality of all Blue Apron products and ingredients. Create magic following our step-by-step instructions. You'll experience the magic of cooking recipes that the master Blue Apron chefs created with your family's tastes in mind. With step-by-step instructions, so you never miss a beat and have to get frustrated about making the meal. I know I do that. At least, when I'm not eating a delicious Blue Apron meal that is. Responsibly sourced, quality ingredients like fresh produce, sustainable seafood and exclusive spice blends means you're going to have a meal that's top tier over the common fast food garbage most people eat. And Blue Apron cares about the environment, which is another reason I love them so much, with recyclable ice packs and packaging to ensure your ingredients stay fresh until you're home and ready and easily disposable for the health of Mother Earth. Do yourself a favor, and take care of your body and mind the way nature intended it, with a healthy meal that's also gloriously delicious. With Blue Apron, the yummy goodness is dropped off right to your very doorstep. So if you like food, and you like not going places, then why not try Blue Apron, and give your mind a rest from going to crowded grocery stores, and writing a list of stuff to get, only to forget half. Blue Apron's got you.
Hi there, thanks for listening to Cryptic Chronicles. The show is sponsored by Blueberry, and if you're interested in starting your own podcast, use our link. We'll even give your podcast a shout out. Go to crypticchroniclespodcast.com and click on the Blueberry link on the homepage. By doing so, you'll be helping the show. Blueberry is optimized for iTunes as well as all podcast hubs. You won't have to worry about expensive contracts or fees. In fact, you won't have to leave your own website. You'll have your own RSS feed and no third-party sites. Try it for a month free by going through Cryptic Chronicles. Also, if you're a fan of cryptic content, please support the show on Patreon. By giving just $1 a month, you can really assist us in posting more content frequently. You'll also have access to bonus ad-free episodes of the show and the Discord channel. To keep up with all Cryptic Chronicles content, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and of course, Facebook. Give the Facebook page a like and join the Cryptic Chronicles group. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for supporting the show. But most of all, thanks for listening.
Hello, dear listener. Have you ever had a paranormal experience? A spiritual or esoteric experience? Have you ever seen a UFO or something that you could not explain? Have you ever witnessed anomalous activity that defies reality? Have you ever experienced unexplained mysteries of existence? If you have your own cryptic tale and would like to have it shared on the podcast, then call 1-800-757-6049 and leave a message of your experience. If it's what Cryptic Chronicles is all about, then it will be shared on the show. Just make sure you thought about what you will say ahead of time and give a clear and concise account. Also, make sure to leave your name, where you're from, or any information that will assist in making a clear picture to portray to listeners of Cryptic Chronicles. Once again, call 1-800-757-6049. That's 1-800-757-6049. We look forward to hearing from you.
One of the key factors of the Egyptian philosophy that trickled down into Greek philosophy and is present in Hermetic philosophy is the idea of eternity, the continuum. Eternity was not in the future or the past. It was always present in the now. Everything has already happened, and it will happen again. Our senses do not represent the true reality accurately, and the way we experience time is an illusion. It was a mix of Greek thought that formed on Egyptian soil and is known today as Neoplatonism. The Neoplatonic structure of hyperreality has three levels of hyperstasis, three levels that literally stand under one another, behind all that appears to exist. The first hyperstasis is the One, or the Good, the ineffable source beyond being, beyond the articulation of properties for it, and beyond forms that, though flowing from it, cannot describe it. The second hyperstasis is nous, the mind, or intellect. It is the reality of being and of identity. It molds the forms that come from the One. The third hyperstasis is the psyche, or the soul, which mediates all other forms. It guides through time, creating the linear illusion we see it to be. Temporal occurrences come from this stasis, transitory objects, and sense perception. All exist in one, and one in all the other. It is a unity of the ineffable One, shaped in multiplicity, separate, yet united, opposites, yet whole. Geometry, math, and all their wonders flow through all the continuum, and you can even see some Pythagorean influence here. Continuity with infinite differences was already an accepted aspect of the Egyptian gods, and you could see so many ideas, wisdom traditions, and philosophies melding together in ancient Alexandria in Egypt. If anyone of that time said that the world was a world of gods, they were talking about the Egyptian gods. Maybe not specifically, but definitely with implication, since the Greeks said their gods came from Egypt. And how many gods throughout human culture are based on the Greek gods? Look at the Roman Empire, for example. So, kind of consistent at this time, the idea that the gods came from Egypt. Parmenides, as I talked about in the last episode, was one of the first Greek thinkers to really inspire this idea. The idea of the One being united in a continuum, while at the same time separated in infinite ways. These ideas are essential to the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus and cascade through all the Hermetic traditions. Even the New Age ones in the fan fiction, as one of my listeners has called it. And interestingly enough, quantum physics of our modern times actually backs this idea up pretty well as the discovery of the God particle, thanks to the CERN Hadron Collider. It's a particle that basically unites all matter in existence, manifesting matter differently depending on how it interacts with the field. Again, paradox is the point, according to tradition, it is through Hermetic enlightenment that all these paradoxes are made discernible. And now let's start kind of going over these overviews of the essential Hermetic texts again, like I began to do at the end of last episode on this subject. This one is called the Poimandres. The Poimandres is a first in a series of initiatory texts found within the Corpus Hermeticum. Now, you know, like I've already said, simply reading or having it read to you is a form of initiation that can plant seeds and change you inside and out. And since it doesn't matter if it's real or not, it's the intent that matters. I'm not going to really directly quote anything out of the Corpus Hermeticum or any of the initiatory texts, just in case there's any legitimacy to any of that, because obviously you being where you are and me being where I am at the time, point in time I am, you cannot consent to me reading you possibly initiatory stuff that could alter your brain. I'm half joking, but if we're going over Hermetic traditions seriously, let's take them seriously. So if you want to do that on your own, go for it. Read all the Corpus Hermeticum and the initiatory texts and have fun with that. But you gotta do that on your own time. And guess who the main figure is here? Our main man? The title of this episode himself, Hermes Trismegistus, the Thrice Great. The figure is attributed to so much influence of late antiquity, the Renaissance, and our own present time, so though there was always a proto-Hermeticism, it didn't really quite form in the instantly familiar way like most would see it until the Corpus Hermeticum. The surviving Hermetica, including the Corpus Hermeticum, includes somewhere around 40 texts, with much more thought to be lost from history, or in a more positive light, hidden away from the world until the time is right for them to be re-released. There are also 4 texts in the Nag Hammadi Library on Hermetic definitions, as well as various fragments here and there, and tons of references from, you know, other surviving texts that refer to lost Hermetic texts, especially in Byzantine culture. Church fathers and Muslim authors, they all really dug this stuff, but it overall shows that Hermetic texts were numerous, and a lot has been lost to time, war, and suppression. And the translated meaning of the word Poimandres is very interesting because it means shepherd of men, which is a common saying in the Abrahamic religions. It is a story of a probable initiate talking to a master of wisdom. The master is speaking while the prospective disciple is in meditation. The initiate in the Poimandres must conceptualize the knowledge intuitively, and only then can it be brought forth to conscious realization. And as the intuition and understanding rises, the initiate becomes Hermes Trismegistus. The master of wisdom teaches Hermes, though it is not even a human mortal, but a deity that calls itself the mind, Nos, of the authentic one. It is an intelligent sentience from beyond corporeal existence. As the teaching goes, the first step of wisdom is releasing oneself from the confines of their birth horoscope. The harmony of the macrocosm governs corporeal existence, specifically in this case, the 7 planetary astrological forces, and the hidden intelligences that dwell within them on the other side of material reality. They govern what could be defined as psychological traits in people, inherent when they are born. Realization involves releasing oneself from the confines of one's horoscope, the last step to true initiation. To do so is realization of one's own divine identity, not in an arrogant or narcissistic or power-hungry manner, but more in a release and an acceptance of all that is. The beauty and harmony of all things become self-evident. And this is an initiatory text all its own because just as the initiate is becoming Hermes Trismegistus, so too is the reader becoming Hermes Trismegistus. Not in a possession type of thing. It's all like symbolism and metaphor. like anybody can become Hermes Trismegistus. You get what I'm saying? It's a title that you can kind of get if you do a certain level of development. And oddly, there is also some Gnostic stuff that Poimandris talks about to the initiate, including the Demiurge, which is interesting. It's pretty obvious how there is a symbiotic nature, kind of, between Gnosticism and Hermeticism, to a degree, from certain points of view, don't get me wrong. But the being also kind of explains how reality itself works to a degree, as well as an abstract view of the nature of life and death and the human relationship to it. Poimandris tells the initiate that the true God, the true reality, the true oneness of all things, is mind. Remember in the first episode when I talked about the Kabbalion and how, like, a lot of people say the Kabbalion isn't legitimate Hermeticism, but I said there's actually a lot of overlap. This is one example. Whereas in the Kabbalion, it says, all is mind. The universe is mental. Well, this is where that saying comes from. We live within and are generated by an ineffable overmind. And invoking this mind of the authentic one is actually key to the more esoteric practices of Hermeticism. However, the whole breaking free of the seven planets and the astrological influence stuff that I just said, that also is just symbolism and metaphor. It's an example. So even if you don't believe in, zodiac, astrology, it doesn't matter, because it's just supposed to be representing... It's a metaphor for any kind of conditioning that must be broken. Remember in the first episode when I talked about the hymn to Hermes, how he scoops up the turtle, taking out its innards, and turns it into a musical instrument. And at the same time, it can, of course, be looked at as zodiacal influences, which many occultists do. But I'm saying it's not necessary. The essence of what this is saying, what the Ineffable One is trying to do to the initiate, is actually something that I've talked about many times on this show, to the point of exhaustion, to break free of reality tunnels, especially ones that don't belong to you and that were put on you. So to break free of social conditioning, essentially, cultural conditioning, any brainwashing, both secular and religious, or any brainwashing of any sort. This is the true what it's representing when he's talking about losing these influences to become born again, to awaken to the true reality and become a walker on the path of wisdom. To cut off all the things that we are not. You find this in Buddhism as well, Taoism, Zen Buddhism. It's like when you're finding enlightenment, you're not gaining anything. You're cutting off what shouldn't be there. You're getting rid of what isn't you. And that's the true attainment to enlightenment, becoming who you are. Letting go of all the artificial things attached to you by exterior sources outside of your control. This is probably the hardest thing to accomplish for any real, hermetic practitioner. Because, I don't know, I probably shouldn't try to go into subconscious programming and all that. But you actually find this theme in all wisdom traditions for the most part, as well as this theme of rebirth in many religions as well, especially in Christianity, baptism, being reborn. Same kind of idea here, except through hermetic disciplines, you literally are reborn and remade, becoming who you are. It's said to be frightening to some because to many, it kind of feels like you're losing your identity, but it is actually one's true identity finally asserting itself. Another way people like to say this is, like in modern times, a good modern analogy is unplug from the matrix. And while unplugging from the matrix sounds easy, it is not. Think about your political beliefs, your spiritual beliefs, your scientific beliefs, what we've been taught about history, and how that knowledge shapes our worldview, Think about all the stuff that we've been taught from just like opinions of people in both videos, audio formats, entertainment, or just friends and family, coworkers, acquaintances. Think of all the things used to move around us on the chessboard that, to some extent, we think makes us, us. Think about all that, and then imagine it being all burned away from you. What's left? It's possible you've never thought of that before, but that is the true you. Perfect in all ways, just not complete. And you may think, oh, well, that just means I don't believe in anything or have an identity. Nah, screw that. That sounds dumb, right? You know, people who are into Buddhist enlightenment kind of think that too. It's like, oh, well, I just lose who I am and I don't like anything anymore and I don't want anything and I'm just like a robot. You know, it's a valid thing to be worried about at face value, but only at face value because that's just a misconception. Like you'll always be on the path of good or evil based on the golden rule. You will always be like, you'll always have the likes and dislikes that make you you. You know, things you enjoy. That's just what it means to be human. Like even the most highest enlightened people like Buddhists and whatnot, they don't lose who they are. They become who they are. It's not like you're becoming a robot. You'll always be human and subject to human nature no matter what. But through this hermetic work, in the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus, from this point of view, this paradigm, it is to be free. And also the ability to see things from a semi-macrocosmic point of view for the first time. To exist in the true reality, to an extent. We are still just humans. And as humans, we are subject to our puny brains. It doesn't mean you won't favor some ideas over others, but the aspect of how these things are an interface and nothing more becomes clear and like a lifelong awareness. Oddly enough, it's said eventually, one could see that these interfaces have semi-sentience themselves. And they all plug directly into the ineffable one. The ineffable light, the all, the one thing. The Holy One, the Divine, the Lord of the Universe, the Ancient of Days, the Secret Fire, whatever you want to call it, the God of Hermeticism, that is so similar from the Star Wars franchise, like the Force from the Star Wars franchise. It's technically all gods. It's technically you. So yeah, you could see how fascinating the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus truly are. And this paradigm. One can be a hermeticist and be a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew, a witch, a pagan, a Taoist, a Buddhist. I mean, literally any spiritual tradition, a hermeticist can take part, or be a part of any ideological faction and still be a hermeticist without any hypocrisy or contradictions. And even more interesting is, just like I think I mentioned in the last episode of Hermes Stuff, a hermeticist would never tell you they are a hermeticist, or be forward or open with that knowledge, or any of the wisdom that they've attained. They'll usually just act like any normal person, though a pleasant one. That is, unless they deem you worthy. Otherwise, their lips are sealed because they will not profane the mystery. That is why, from the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus, one should have respect for all religions. Because all of them have a sliver of the ineffable light running through them, despite the differences in the interfaces. All of a sudden, so much conflict just dies away, both in the mind and in our exterior world. And for the first time, one's principles, integrity, and actions become truly one's own. This is what Hermes Trismegistus seeks to accomplish with those who follow his teachings. And you know, there is much more. I'm trying to just sum it up really easy for you to digest. But if there's anything out of these teachings that is the most essential, most important, this is it. To be scooped up, cleaned out, and turned into something that makes beautiful music, just like the tortoise in Hymn to Hermes. All metaphorical, obviously. Like, imagine that old alchemy piece of art where it shows that guy like peeking outside of reality to see gears, like gears of existence spinning behind the veil of our physical 3D reality. You know, it's a pretty well-known, famous picture. The state of being is the true self, pure consciousness, pure awareness, in an intimate relationship with the eternal now. So, it makes sense that Poimandres is the first part of the Hermetica, the Corpus Hermeticum, because it is literally essential to absorb and intuitively integrate in order to continue to progress through the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus. According to the lore, without this accomplishment, there is no progress. Oh man, I have been talking way too long about the Poimandres. Still so much to cover. This episode might be a little bit longer than normal. And there's still much more to talk about concerning the Corpus Hermeticum. This is all an overview, not a deep dive though. In fact, there's actually 17 chapters or different texts that are in the Corpus Hermeticum. Poimandres is just the first one. Nah, we'll move on. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to go grab some coffee. And when we come back, we're going to hop into the Chaldean Oracles. We'll be right back.
One thing you can invest in that does not lose value is gold and silver. There is no better place to go for financial security than GoldCo, rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau. Get the free 2023 Gold IRA kit Americans are using to protect their retirement savings. Get your free 2023 Gold IRA kit at goldcogoldkit.com. GoldCo is a leader in the precious metals industry. From precious metals IRA to direct purchases of precious metal coins and bars, we partner with individuals seeking to diversify and safely grow their retirement portfolios. Allow GoldCo to make your gold and silver investments easy, seamless, and secure. Our investment is in good hands. Chuck Norris, what? Oh, I'm recording.
$30 off weed with code PODCAST? Did someone say $30 off weed with code PODCAST? Amuse delivers over 500 high-quality cannabis products from the Bay Area brands you love at everyday low prices. You can also rest assured that everything will be up to your high standards. So what are you waiting for? Start shopping now at Amuse.com. Use promo code PODCAST to save $30 off your next order. That's AMUSE.com.
Is your brain always hungry? Do you have a mental appetite that often goes unsated? You may be suffering from hungry brain syndrome, a debilitating and sometimes life-threatening condition experienced by humans who require double, sometimes even quadruple, the amount of mental nutrition needed to sustain the general population. But now there's help. For years, our dedicated team of world-class researchers have been developing a thicker, more nutrient-dense podcast specifically for sufferers of hungry brain syndrome. And now we want to share it with you. All you have to do is search for our podcast, The Whole Rabbit, in your podcast player of choice, and select from one of our delicious flavors, like Slovenian succubi, Gnosticism, or ancient Egypt. It's no wonder The Whole Rabbit is the most recommended treatment for hungry brain syndrome on the market. So what are you waiting for? Try The Whole Rabbit today. Do not listen while deep sea diving. Side effects may include eating carrots and shooting lasers.
To the Chaldean Oracles, the next and essential text within the Hermetica. The Chaldean Oracles are not wholly intact, though. It is also known as the Chaldean Philosophy of the Neoplatonic philosophers hanging out in late classical Egypt, the brewing and melting pot where Proto-Hermeticism would become its own thing out of the mists of ancient Egypt. It is mostly quoted from Neoplatonists and can be kind of hard to follow. And is very archaic, but still extremely fascinating and enlightening. There are different ideas about them too, like they originated in Syria, stuff like that. Different ideas of where they could have come from. The Julii pair, one channeling the verses from a vision or dreamlike state, and the other documenting them, is similar to scrying from esoteric tradition, but the oracles are definitely being passed around in ancient Egypt, ancient Alexandria, in Egypt specifically. This is a fact. In any case, they have been a coveted and revered piece of work tightly roped into Western philosophy and Hermeticism. They're pretty popular in Imperial Rome's philosophical circles, as well as of the pre-Christian Rome, as well as the early Christian Roman Empire. However, all the fragments that we do have from the original source is just quotes from other people in their own stuff about the tablets, not the tablets, the oracles, the Chaldean oracles. The later Roman Imperial Catholic Church really tried to snuff out a lot of this stuff and like stomp it into the ground out of existence. But here we are. And one of the weirdest things about the Chaldean oracles is that nobody really knows which order they're actually supposed to be in. And some don't really seem like they belong, but could be altered versions shoved in there as genuine because they have a somewhat Christian bent. There's like 215 or something of these oracles, but only around 80 are considered pure and unchanged or unaltered. It's pretty easy to pick out the ones that don't quite fit So there's that. But they are still very much worth looking into. The fragments are incredibly cryptic, but you gotta like the stuff in there about Hecate. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Hecate is the goddess of magic in ancient Greece. And oddly, Heka is the name for the magic current through all reality in ancient Egypt. I think Hermes, Hecate, Themis, and Morpheus are probably my favorite gods from ancient Greece. And with ancient Greece and ancient Egypt having such ties to Hermeticism, the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus, Hecate has her place in all this. Overall, the fragments have a heavy Greek pantheon vibe, with of course many heavy Hermetic tones as well as some light-sounding Christian kind of stuff. The Chaldean oracles are kind of all over the place. Still, there is said to be much Hermetic wisdom contained within the Chaldean oracles. The oracles are probably the most abstract and hard to talk about out of all the essential Hermetica, but I suggest you delve deeper into them yourself if it piques your interest. They seem like they'd be fun to read on, like, mushrooms or something. Which is a ridiculous thing to say, and I shouldn't say, don't do that! And then, next up for the essential Hermetic texts, is the Metamorphosis of Apuleius, also known as the Golden Ass, and in a lot of circles is one of the initiatory texts to, like, Hermetic spiritual circles. It's also sometimes referred to as the Vision of Isis, which goes on to reveal the ever-present symbiosis of ancient Egypt and Hermeticism. In the tale, a man named Lucius is turned into an ass for his sexual behavior and his recklessness in his magical practice. He wanders about the ancient Coptic world and is used as any beast of burden is used by other humans. However, this really sucks because, Lucius maintains his human intellect and is fully aware the whole time that he's cursed, the whole time that he's an ass, he's fully cognizant as any human would be as in a normal human body. And throughout the whole ordeal, he shares his inner thoughts. Lucius comments on the lives of his masters, and with people speaking around him like he was just a normal animal, he analyzes these people's stories and gains wisdom in silence. Eventually, Lucius gains so much wisdom through his silence. His curse comes to an end, and he's granted a vision by the goddess Isis. She tells him that he will be granted his human form once more, and he shall be initiated into the Isis mysteries and become one of her priests. At the end of the book is Lucius going over all this in detail, including the ceremony for his initiation and the magnificence of the divine Isis. It tells of the divine being that is truly behind all the great goddesses. The all from Hermeticism, if you didn't put that together. Again, we have a theme of death, transformation, and rebirth. The story mirrors the Osiris tale in some ways, but it's analogous to myriad cycles of rebirth and, you know, like tales of transformation throughout all cultures and all history. That's the thing about Hermeticism is it's timeless. And according to Hermeticism, according to people who subscribe to the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus, the wisdom that can be gained from the story is profound and useful to anyone that can actually understand it and integrate it. The last book that we're going to go over out of the essential texts of the Hermetica, the essential teachings of Hermes Trismegistus, is On Divine Virtue by Zosimus of Panopolis. Zosimus was an Egyptian alchemist back during the 4th century BC. The exact location where he lived or had prominence is unknown, but it's a safe guess that it was in Alexandria, Egypt. The man is alleged to have authored a whole bunch of Hermetic texts, but sadly only a few have not been lost to the sands of time or completely destroyed. Some of his work was translated into Arabic and became essential in the absorption of alchemy within the Muslim culture. So he's important not only in the history of Western esotericism, but many civilizations. On Divine Virtue, since translated into English, has become one of the essential Hermetic texts to those dedicated to the mysteries of Hermes. Yet again, we are presented with the Hermetic theme of personal transformation, and metaphorically, becoming gold. Zosimos was a follower of Hermes Trismegistus, and his writings make that perfectly clear. Despite the name of the text being On Divine Virtue, it's actually not similar to dogmatic Christian-type ideas that would evolve over centuries to become the establishment form of controlling the masses. This is not that kind of thing here, so don't take that the wrong way. Virtue actually had a slightly different meaning to the people of the ancient world, a different meaning that we might not be used to when concerning the term virtue. We wouldn't attribute it to it normally. For example, the Romans looked at virtue as strength. Virtue could be seen as being honorable, being brave, being a good friend, being a good father, son, brother, etc. Virtue wasn't directly tied with this idea of being a goody-goody. And the virtue of Zosimos was more philosophically spiritual than categorized like as moral ideas and laws to follow, like directed by a higher power. Over the years, it has been popular to divide Hermetica into two separate groups, Philosophical Hermetica and Technical Hermetica. Philosophical Hermetica is the stuff like the Corpus Hermeticum. Technical Hermetica is more occult in nature, such as the Greek magical papyri. One is more enlightening mentally, while the other is more practical, like you're doing stuff with it. It's hard to explain, but they both overlap, you know, in real hermeticisms. Like, they probably have, like, people going back and forth between the two, not one set over the other. Hermetic wisdom is a tool. The craft transmutes the craftsman. So this idea of dividing the Hermetica into two categories is kind of irrelevant in many ways, because the transformation happens regardless. But if we are dividing the Hermetica up, like in this way, some people do like to do it this way. Zosimos is probably one of the most pure forms of philosophical Hermetica. But at the same time, it's also practical because there are occult secrets and transformation within it regardless. And yet again, we are seeing the theme of Hermeticism being a union of opposites. Just by reading and thinking about these texts is a form of transformation of character and consciousness, which happens just as much as performing any mystical Hermetic acts. So you can see why I don't read this directly to you. Just because, allegedly according to this stuff and people who subscribe to it, there's a possibility to permanently shift and change someone just by hearing or reading the text, allegedly. I'm not trying to tell you it's true or untrue that this could be a possibility. So, I don't know, but I think that can probably freak a lot of people out. What do you think? Especially people who are kind of superstitious. And On Divine Virtue is one of these transformation tales as well, as we've seen constantly over the entire Hermetica. So you'll notice that I just did really super overviews of these texts and didn't go too in-depth at all of these teachings of Hermes Trismegistus. I gave you one reason. But one cannot be told how to interact with Hermeticism. It must be analyzed and experienced subjectively to truly be understood or comprehended. And I in no way do it justice. Nor did I ever think it was possible that I could do it justice before even starting to put this show together. So when I was asked to make some episodes on this topic, I knew I had my work cut out for me. But I also knew that I didn't have to be, like, too much of a perfectionist. I already had all the books I need and already had a decent knowledge on the subject. But I also knew it would be better to just plant seeds than to act like some sort of authority on the matter. So I've left a decent amount up to your personal analysis without telling you what I think or how to think about these things. Because that's just how it should be. Never look for absolutes in Hermeticism in the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus. Or do. Whatever. Many Christian writers concluded Hermes Trismegistus to be a wise pagan prophet that had the vision to see the coming of Christianity. The early Christians saw him as a sage who understood the Prisca Theologia, a single theology that has currents through all religions. Despite this early opinion, later Christians still did try to crush Hermeticism into the ground, failing as best as they could, if you get what I mean. The Hermetic texts were a part of the pop culture consciousness, even in ancient Christian Europe, the medieval times. They were not widely published, though, and monks and priests, the people who took care of books and all that stuff, they didn't spend a lot of time with the scrolls and texts upkeep because, you know, why would they do that with pagan work? They were pagan, right? They considered them pagan, so why would they keep the upkeep of all this stuff? But they were also there in the Byzantine Empire, as well as basically all of the East and Near East, all of that area. They kept the whole spirit of Hermeticism alive pretty well. The Hermetica was well taken care of, and even had many profound Hermetic texts written during this time, such as the Book of the 24 Philosophers. In essence, the Corpus Hermeticum, or just the Hermetica, all the Hermetica, and the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus in general is about personal growth. This is the core and the root of how Hermes scoops out your falsehoods and replaces it with beauty and wonder. It is a tradition of personal empowerment, and the seeds that grow, they grow into the heights of wisdom that humans can comprehend. The Hermetica seeks to aid the initiate into an ever-increasing level of spiritual growth through the initiation into Hermetic mysteries. And in this sense, it is through the magnum opus, humans can even become analogous to a god. Don't get delusions of grandeur, though. It is not meant to be in the way you might think. More so, the human can unite with God, capital G. So any egoic fantasies of becoming a superhero and like throwing lightning around or using mind powers to manipulate people in the world should be swept aside. And that kind of power would never be what the initiate seeks in the first place. There are some occultists out there who do claim that you can become a living god, like straight up, while still being alive in this lifetime. And such thinking is incredibly dangerous, and Hermes Trismegistus would have not been cool with that. To Hermeticism, one who attains the magnum opus seeks no power over others or the world. But you can become a co-creator with God. So you can see how some of the views on this stuff can be kind of goofy and misleading. To be one of mind and soul with the all is to be in harmony with nature, life, and the turbulent, never-ending opposites and polarities that make up existence. The Hermetica teaches about silence and meditation, and it's super like Eastern philosophies like Taoism, like I've already said a billion times. But the key is always, it's always more associated with inner growth, spiritual growth, and personal enlightenment. That is the end goal of the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus. A true Hermeticist from the ancient world would fit right in meditating with a Buddhist monk under a waterfall, for example. Knowledge is a spiritual awakening, and through the mysteries of Hermeticism, one can realize the supreme God. The All actually wishes to be known by individual humans, but only by those who are worthy of it and prepared for it, which can only be accomplished through piety, meditation, and dedication towards inner work. So the Hermetic teachings or the path of Hermeticism can be a turnoff for people who are just like looking for a quick fix kind of a thing, you know, like many New Age people are looking for. And it can be a turnoff for someone who believes in occult powers and is looking for personal power because they want to, you know, just gain personal power, I guess. But when they realize that the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus isn't about that, and it requires a lot of dedication and work, they usually get turned off pretty quick. and they go into other more like dark fringe type of stuff. Hermeticism is a lifelong process, not a power grab. And in the end, the initiate into the Hermetic mysteries is likely not even to care about worldly desires and wants anymore anyway. Because you see the game. You see, I don't want to say things as they truly are. You see things in a way that's bigger picture thinking without getting sounding too woo-woo. You also see the constant dance of opposites interplaying with each other in infinite shades of gray. So a lot of times, our polarization that has been indoctrinated into us disperses, which can cause a lot of fear in people. And the person is also no longer really easily manipulated in any way, fashion, or form, like the masses are. The Hermetic teachings give many practices aimed at enhancing mental faculties, and some say there is even a mimetic type of engravement that happens on the mind from Hermetic texts. Hermetic sentences latch onto the subconscious and get pushed up and are working around everywhere, even when one is not thinking about them. These mimetics can be implanted into the mind and not easily removed. Hermetic teachings work overdrive on your mind, even when you're not thinking about it, and long after you've read the texts. Or at least that's what people say. Remember, I'm not trying to say that this is true or false, just giving you an unbiased overview. But once some Hermetic teachings are engraved into one's mind, it allegedly can permanently alter the way one views the world, or just life in general. In the Corpus Hermeticum, the teachings are done in dialogues between two people for the most part. In Book 1, we get Poimandres, who teaches young Hermes, but Hermes is not the god Hermes, but a human, though a human being that happens to have attained divine knowledge. In Book 12, we get a daemon, or daimon, which I've talked about before on the show and is the root word for the word demon, but this daimon is good. It is a good spirit. This daimon is also one of the teachers of Hermes. Then Hermes is the teacher of Asclepius. So these teachings go around back and forth in a teacher-to-disciple style, which is kind of essential to Hermetic tradition. And all are reborn and forever altered into a higher being through the Hermetic mysteries. It forever raises the initiate's consciousness to the point it rises even above the cosmos. And this is where it becomes godlike. An interior faculty of perception is cultivated to the point that silence itself can become a language, and words can cease to be able to express what the initiate experiences. The magnum opus shows that death does not exist. In the texts, death is an illusion. There is only creation and transformation. This is the truth of all things. Man is a microcosm that mirrors the macrocosm. The true nature of reality is not mortality, but immortality. And Hermes teaches that even in death, this is just another transformation and not the end. He says that even all the souls that swim throughout the cosmos are even them a single soul. Just like all things are in truth, a single thing. The transformation can be difficult depending on the circumstances. And this goes for all things in existence, including animals, insects, and plants. Human souls can become like immortals and join the ranks of the gods. What can be perceived as death can be the cyclical rebirth, which humans can fall back on, being transformed over and over without spiritual growth. This idea kind of reminds me of the beliefs of the Druids, but in essence, human souls can go into never-ending cycles of degrading and elevating, but never reaching the magnum opus. They are still immortal and part of the one thing, but never attain the higher self. So, they do and they don't. It gets confusing. Hermes teaches that when we are alive, we are actually dead. And when we die, we become alive. The people on earth are mortal gods. And God with a capital G is an immortal man. But all is from the one. One can attain to know God fully, which God wishes to be known. but like can only understand like. So, to know God, one must transcend time itself and grow and increase oneself through a life of inner work. This journey is the ascent to the land of the gods. And I know how confusing all this stuff is, so don't think about it too much. Just let it marinate in your mind in the background. Only when one thing is diminished can it reveal the power of another. And this stuff is not meant to be understood in early interaction. In fact, I don't think it can be understood at all, to be honest. Even after studying it or reading lots of stuff on it, people spend their whole lives studying Hermeticism and go to their deathbeds without understanding it. So don't worry about it too much. But I hope you enjoyed this episode on the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus, part two of it. There's still other things that I kind of could cover on this. Like, I thought it might be cool to go into maybe Franz Barden, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, and kind of see how branches of Hermetic thought have influenced things to create, kind of become their own thing. But only if you guys want more of this. So if I get asked by at least 20 people, I'll make more episodes on this topic. If not, here you go. As promised, two episodes on the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus. All right, that's all for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed this overview of the teachings of Hermes Trismegistus two-parter. And as always, I'd like to thank some of my current supporters. James Kirk Spratlin, Gina Marie, Carlos Moran, Deidre, Jamie Zimmerman, Justin Rollins, Phantom, David Aguirre, John, Mark Beebe, Laura Daivona, Trusty Old Senpai, Space Coin, Lorna Grubb, Adrian, MJ Calvo, Sophia Owens, and Emily Schmemily. Thank you so much for supporting Cryptic Chronicles, but most of all, thanks for listening. And as one of the most famous ancient Romans once said, those who are brave are free.